There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
You know what? I can't wait for 2021 to begin.
Yeah.
And when we get out there, we're back on the road. And the first show, we're already planning on this.
Oh, yeah.
You can call this satire if you want, but I'm saying that this is a wish and it's a hope. We're going to go down to Adams County, Tennessee.
Really?
And we're going to do a show just for them. We're going to set up a stage.
Adams County.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful, wow. Adams County. And you know what's going to happen? I can see Kissel asleep in his bed at night.
Because
by then, we'll probably have to sleep in some sort of shanty town or burnout 7-Eleven.
Absolutely. I can see the feather going up and down as I breathe in, exhale. Yeah.
Benjamin Grant Kissel. I see that you are sleeping, long companion of the 7-Eleven.
I was, yeah, but...
Yes. Most excellent you were sleeping. Tell me, Benjamin Grant Kissel.
Oh, my.
Tell me, you know, I can be anywhere in an instant. It is I, old Kate Betts.
Whoa.
The bitch from next door.
Are you TMZ?
No. No, but I will tell you, I can be anywhere in an instant, and I have all Norwich at my disposal, Benjamin Grant Kissel.
All right,
so tell me, of all the queries, of all the knowledge that you seek, what is the question that I will answer for you this night?
If the moon simply reflects off the sun, why do we even need it? What's it doing?
Well, you mean the moon?
The moon. What the hell's it doing? We give it all the credit in the world. It's just a mirror. So that doesn't do anything.
You could have asked any question.
Well, what's the point of the moon? It's just bullshit.
I'm going to leave.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's the most Googleable question. The tides. It controls the tides.
Well, who knew?
Let me see that iPhone of yours. No! Oh, what horrible pictures of the protuberance beneath your sweatpants.
Yes, indeed. Woo! What's up, everyone? Welcome to the last podcast on the left. I am Ben, hanging out with Henry, hanging out with Marcus. Wow, we are going to answer the big questions today, aren't we? Today's episode, this is going to be earth-shattering, mind-altering. You're never going to be the same again.
Yeah, you're going to quit your job.
Good.
You're going to throw your headphones off, and you're going to go to your significant other, and you're going to make sweet love to them in the middle of your family.
Wow. Look at that. Many places, that's a common event, just to make sure that they can get a grandkid on the way. Let's go.
In Europe.
Yes, indeed.
But this episode, we're going to get a little bit more spooky. Because last week, I think we were kind of setting it up. And I think in all the fun of the Bell Witch, we kind of forget that at the heart of it, like in my mind, I see these things like a movie. So in the beginnings of The Haunting, like in my mind, I see like a gritty version of the, like, you know, antebellum South. It's real intense. And then you've got like
you don't
a little
see
girl.
A really like fun version of the antebellum South.
You know why? Because they didn't. Like the
good, they did have some good times, I'm sure, too.
If they did invent roller coasters, it'd be a different story altogether.
What if they invented roller skates? The juxtaposition there would be hard to deal
exactly.
with.
Exactly. All the short shorts and all the field work. But imagining the little girl of the Bell family, like, being snapped up in the night and going, like, like, I can see that in, like, a modern horror day movie equivalent.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's very Exorcist-esque.
The Haunting of Connecticut is actually very similar.
Well, no kidding. And, of course, Vince McMahon is the major ghost of Connecticut. That's where the WWE headquarters are located.
Oh, I was actually going to bring up that the Blair Witch Project actually was inspired by the story of the Bell Witch.
Well, no kidding. We could do this all day, folks. Let's get to part two of the Bell Witch.
So when we last left the Bell family, their own personal poltergeist had been haunting them for 2 years, having evolved from a creature of simple knocks outside the walls of their home to a full-blown communicative spirit with the ability to physically harm the living.
Yeah.
Oh, it's getting older. It's learning.
It's learning.
That's nice.
But where the poltergeist had focused most of its energy on the young Betsy Bell during the first half of the haunting, it was about to switch most of its malevolent focus to the patriarch, John Bell, the second half.
This is where it gets very dark. And I also want to address the fact that I have been, there's been a lot of corrections this week in pronunciations.
Sure, and with side stories. It's Meyer supermarket.
We know that. We know that now. And also, it's monarchy, not monarch.
No kidding.
Yep.
How is that any better?
I don't think it's better. It's just correct. It's just, but again, the
Steve
first...
Monarchy sounds like someone who goes door to door collecting monarch.
That's his job. He works for the Census Bureau.
Really?
You let him do his job.
Oh my. But how many bleeders do you have in the house? Well, you could have asked the agent a different way, couldn't you?
I'll tell you what. I got one bleeder and I got one that's about to be a bleeder.
That's disgusting.
But this story, it does come from the first egg, because that's what they say a lot of times, is that the Poltergeist is born from the first egg that comes from a little girl, when she becomes a little chicken.
Really? Okay.
Now, as we said, the Bell Witch had become a sort of tourist attraction in Tennessee by simple virtue of word of mouth. But while most people showed up wanting some measure of a ghostly experience, some skeptics just couldn't help but try and ruin a good time.
It's because they weren't invited.
Absolutely. And you know, the Tennessee competition when it comes to just fun attractions is very intense. You got the world's biggest shoe, which is a size 25, which is a big shoe.
And these skeptics always show up with rulers and say, yeah, I've seen bigger shoes.
Yes, indeed. Cheese wedge from outer space.
They just painted it black.
Yes, indeed.
See, a detective known only as Mr. Williams, who was from Baltimore, had heard about the Bell Witch phenomenon and for some reason offered to travel almost 800 miles to solve the mystery.
Hold on a second. So he's a detective in Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
What, he didn't have enough work to do? I have a feeling this man was done doing homicides and was just like, I'm going to go investigate the ghost.
This was before Baltimore was Baltimore.
Okay.
Now he is just trying to get away from his family, because I think at some point he's like, I gotta get out of the south and find a goat somewhere, because if not, I'm getting a divorce.
Oh.
Well, Mr. Williams went into the case already determined that the bells were frauds, and upon his arrival, he essentially announced that he thought that this whole scene was a fucking sham, saying that he didn't believe in the supernatural and was furthermore an expert in detecting illusions, sleight of hand, and other forms of trickery.
I've ruined 3 kids' birthday parties this week.
Nothing worse than a magician heckler. Nothing worse than that.
On the first night, Mr. Williams heard no more than a few faint scratches and knocks, which he took as evidence that the bells were indeed flim-flam artists who were afraid to bring out the full show in front of such an intelligent man as he.
Look at how big my necktie is. Look at how big my head is. You mean to tell me I'm not smart?
But
you're
also,
very
again,
smart.
This is where the... I want to see the folklore end of the Bell Witch story. We're going to get into it a little bit later on. But this is where the story of the Bell Witch features another first in the lexicon of haunting stories, is that we have an expert showing up to solve the whole thing. Like, we had the religious expert show up and it got laughed at. Then we had Ghost Bro, mm-hmm, trying to wrestle the ghost into submission. Again, all first. And then now we have the first, like, it's the nerd guys from The Conjuring showing
sure
up, trying to figure out how to nip this thing in the bud, but also show that it is perchance a sham.
And mm-hmm, they did a good job in The Conjuring of providing comic relief.
They did.
And also their demise was quite entertaining.
But the second night, after Mr. Williams went to sleep, he was woken up by a great force pressing down on his chest and stomach, while his arms were pinned above his head and his face was punched and scratched.
Oh my God, am I making a custom video? I haven't paid for this yet.
Wow, that'll cost you extra.
He then heard a voice.
So, Mr. Detective, which of the bells do you think is on top of you right now?
Before he was able to answer, he was punched again.
Gay, bitch. Gay, got it again, you fat little fat boy from Baltimore.
Oh, my.
But when the family heard the commotion and entered the room, they found him unassailed. Instead, Mr. Williams was giving the Bell family a powerful glare, as if they had somehow engineered his invisible pummeling. Ooh. The voice then came back, saying, quote,
don't go blaming them. Now go sit in that chair like a good boy, and maybe I won't knock off your head.
Ooh, I love this video. Ghost cuck. This is going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, fuck my wife, would you go? Yeah, fuck my wife.
Yes, you see how able I am to fuck your wife my big black ghost witch cock.
Oh, wow, yeah,
you
I love
small dicked scientist.
Oh, you're getting me going.
Mr. Williams then did as he was told and sat in a chair, trembling in fear, whilst clutching a candle and listening to taunts from the witch until dawn, when he called for his horse and left for breakfast.
Horse! Where are you, horse?
Horse? What was that, boss?
Hey, I'm on a union break here. Hey, come on. Try that smoking cigarette. It's all with the cigarette taped to my hoof.
Oh, that'll be hard for something with hooves to smoke a cigarette, but maybe better for them in the long run when it comes to health.
Despite all this hubbub, Betsy Bell had been able to carry on a courtship with the age-appropriate Joshua Gardner. Remember, he was the kid who was 18.
Yep.
Right.
And by this point in the story, the youngsters had been seeing each other for about 2 years. But Richard Powell, Betsy's 33-year-old school teacher, was completely in love with the now 14-year-old Betsy.
Yay.
And for reasons that might become clearer later, the Bell Witch had a vested interest in making Richard's dreams a reality.
Oh, so the teacher is going to get the daughter.
Well, the teacher is going to be the daughter by the ghost.
So you're
well,
the
let's
daughter.
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves
here. It is rough when you're the daughter. All of a sudden, you're monarching, whatever it's called.
Yeah, you're shitting out eggs everywhere, and you can't sell them no matter how many times because you're not living in Japan in the 1920s.
So your options are an age-appropriate 18-year-old, a teacher who has to be, what, probably in his 30s or so?
He's 33.
And then another person, and how old was that other dude, in his 40s?
No, this is that guy.
There's only two. Okay. Yeah. All right, got it.
Well, one afternoon, Richard was walking along a road when he felt a smack on the jaw. The witch then spoke and said,
"Betsy and Joshua will soon announce their engagement. You must act now, before it happens."
To this, Richard said, "And why should I do that?"
"Because you love Betsy Bell."
"If I were to step in and press my suit, would I succeed with Betsy?"
"Most assuredly."
"And what proof can you offer me?"
"I offer you nothing, except the promise that I will not beat you into a simpleton if you do enter the lists. You've got to get your vibe on, man. It's me, your buddy, Ghost Hitch. Up here to get you in a suit and teach you how to dance. Kevin James of Tennessee."
Very cool. So this ghost is trying to hook it up.
It's really strange. And I don't know why this entity in this telling has so much invested in the marriage. I really don't know why. But it's more so, it's seemed to be about control. Because one book I started reading, thanks to the Hellier crew, the Newmans, the Trickster and the Paranormal, George P. Hansen. This book is a really interesting study about the idea of paranormal energies entering in as a destabling force during a time when things are really up in the air. Like, what they call a liminal space.
Just when you need it the most. When everything is going to hell, you're like, we could add some more fire to this.
They talked about the jump up of ghost. There's one cool example of talking about the high activity of ghost reporting and sightings during the fall of the USSR and how it like spiked. And there's something about how like the family unit is starting to fall apart. And for some converse way, whatever the poltergeist is also building in strength as the family falls apart, which you see now in every modern haunted house story, right? You see it in Amityville Horror, you see it in The Conjuring. So this idea that once society really starts, like, shaking up, that's when ghosts, like, start jamming their fingers two knuckles deep in there.
Yeah. And the great-great-grandson of the Bell Witch, turns out he's an ESPN ghost reporter, and he had a lot of tough questions for LeBron James about what's next. Los Angeles Lakers, NBA champions.
No, I know. But it's like, does a ghost reporter for ESPN go up to LeBron and say, "LeBron, I've got a message. Kobe says, fuck you"?
Whoa! he wouldn't say that.
No, it's why every fucking haunt, like paranormal horror movie these days is some boring fucking metaphor for grief.
Yeah.
It's every single
every
one. Jesus,
single
I'm
one.
So tired of it.
Yeah, sometimes I just want to see
all like that.
I want to see a happy couple get murdered.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the ghost coming in and talking about Richard, which, you know, some people say was just the ghost, the Bell Witch could not stand for Betsy to be happy in any way whatsoever. And they say, well, she would have been happier with Joshua. So, you know, let's push her towards Richard. And the witch started interfering in Betsy's love life even more. A few months later, the community was gathered on the Bell property for a picnic. And during a lull in the conversation, Joshua Gardner whacked the spoon on the glass and asked for everyone's attention, most likely to announce his intentions for Betsy Bell.
This is like a scene from a Rupert Everett comedy where he's just like about to be in like he because he's like the slick young guy that's kind of going to be with Betsy Bell. Meanwhile, she always overlooks the cute, nerdy man who's 25 years her senior because she's a child.
Well, yes, indeed. I want to know the sentence that happened before the weird silence at the picnic where it's like, and that's when Samantha was like, can you get the pineapple out of there? You know, and then anyway,
Shut up, Harold.
Don't tell the pineapple story anymore.
But before Joshua Gardner could say a word, the witch interrupted, saying that marrying Betsy and whisking her away to another land would be a fool's errand, because the witch could and would follow Betsy anywhere in the world. She then signed off, saying, quote,
please don't marry him, Betsy Bell. Don't marry Joshua Gardner!
What is this reality show ghost that... Who cares, ghost? Yeah. You're a ghost. You're a witch. Why do you care?
Could be in Kris Jenner.
Jeez.
But the interesting thing about this is that the witch had seemed to move on to emotional matters when it came to Betsy Bell. In the realm of the physical, the witch was focusing more and more attention on Betsy's father, John. See, from the moment the witch arrived, John Bell had been afflicted with an intermittent stiffness of the tongue and a sensation that someone was punching him in the jaw.
Now, there's something about the idea of, like, old school dental problems that must have been...
Is that what
been,
this is?
I mean, besides, like, if it's ghost or not, there's something about, like, the, like, 1820s tooth pain
must have
been something else.
Well, you just pull it. Get rid of it.
But then you don't have anything to pull it
but
either.
They didn't have any hard food back then. It was all mush.
It's weird, sorghum. Actually. I think there was sorghum. There's a lot of sorghum. But I also think that there's a lot of hard tack. So it's actually the opposite. There's incredibly hard food and mush.
I see.
And there's very little in between unless you were at the time in the Far East where they were inventing noodles.
No kidding. Isn't that nice?
Isn't that fucking great?
I love it.
Isn't that fucking great?
It is great, honestly.
The Italians stole the noodles from the Chinese.
Really?
I've had a lot of Spring Hill Jack coffee this morning.
As have I. Thank you to the folks over at Spring Hill Jack Coffee for also sending me a couple of bags. And God damn, that's good coffee.
Yes!
Well, this will be fun to keep this show together.
Yeah!
Now, first, these spells would last for only a brief moment. So John was able to hide the symptoms from everyone, including his wife.
Yeah, because he wasn't like he was doing a lot of cunnilingus.
During that 5 minutes of the day.
Mm.
Yes.
But as time went on, these spells grew longer and more serious. What began as a slight inconvenience soon became the bane of John's existence. Sometimes his tongue would stiffen for 10 to 15 hours at a time, making eating or talking impossible, and his face would contort and twitch.
God, and you still have to, like, work the field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you still have to go every day to whatever your 1820s.
Stiff tongue or not a stiff tongue? I mean,
there's something about
the grass.
This is very specific. I don't know why this is so triggering to me. There's
I don't even
about,
know what it means.
It's dental. It is like, imagine
his
if your
tongue can't move at all.
Yeah.
At all.
And it's painful.
Like a rock in your mouth.
Yeah, it becomes like a rock. It becomes stiff and covered with little boils, and it becomes like you can't move it. And then your tongue, the side of your mouth and your tongue are swelling. So you're sitting there, you're in constant pain.
Huh.
Meanwhile, in order to just go outside, this is the time when everything was buttons. You had to wear like 3 different layers of clothes.
Oh, too many clothes, yeah.
There's a lot of shit going on. Then you have to go outside and everything takes work. You can't go to the Piggly Wiggly and get milk. You had to go pull the milk out of the breasts of a 2,000-pound animal every
day. Isn't that something? So he had a stiff tongue.
Yeah, well, he also said that sometimes he felt as if an invisible double-pointed stick was shoved crosswise into his mouth so that it stabbed into his jaws. A constant stabbing pain.
Yeah, like a pretzel rod.
Kind of like that. And a visible fungus began growing on the back of his tongue that swelled his throat.
I don't know what it is, but I just don't feel like my wife loves me anymore.
There's also a time period, you know. What a time period that could have used mouthwash.
Oh, yeah. Good Lord.
But that's not to say the paranormal activity left Betsy Bell completely. On one occasion, in which the family was celebrating the return of brothers John Jr. and Drury, who had just taken a trip to New Orleans, the family
I thought you were going to say the war. They just went to New Orleans? Okay.
They just went to New Orleans.
War is going on now?
No, technically, yeah. The return trip from New Orleans is very rarely celebrated. It's often a slinking into a dark house where you sit and wonder, like, what exactly you did the 4 or 5 days previous.
Right, yeah.
But as they were celebrating, the family saw lights outside their window. Now, by accounts, the lights were beautiful and flickered slowly as if the lights were dancing. And John Bell Sr. thought that the lights were the slaves having fun, so he went outside to give them compliments on the display.
I gotta say, y'all don't normally get points for presentation. Right. But I want to say that I really appreciate the flair that y'all been putting into being forced to work for me.
Yeah, nothing more fun than that. Isn't that exciting?
But once John returned, after seeing that there was nobody outside...
Oh, turns out the slaves are not having fun. I can't even believe that I thought they would be having fun.
Honestly, I just hope that one day they'd kind of wake up and be like, you know what, I want to be here, but it doesn't seem to happen.
No, they don't have fun too often.
Well, once he entered, he heard a loud whisper fill the family room. And so they knew the entity had showed up. Mm. And John Jr. tried asking, what do you want this time? But the whispering only grew louder until a cold draft filled the room and John was thrown to the floor.
Whoa!
Fed up with the whole fucking business, John Jr. jumped from his seat and said, quote,
you are nothing but a demon that was cast out from the depths of hell here to humiliate our family and torture father and Elizabeth. If you are so strong and mighty, then leave Father and Elizabeth out of it and torture me instead. I'm not a coward, but you are.
Oh, very cool.
John Jr.'s blustery display seemed to have worked because the cold wind and whispers stopped immediately.
Okay, if you're serious, I guess. I was trying to have fun. You blew up the whole vibe of the whole room.
After that, the Bells sat back down to resume their conversation, because by this point, these sorts of interruptions is just an everyday part of life.
Back to corn. This is our soft food. It's soft food Wednesday and Friday. We'll go back to hard food.
I love this conversation about what we're eating.
But then came a scream. It was coming from Betsy's room, and when John Jr. and Drury burst in, they found Betsy crying and trembling, saying that a physical entity completely engulfed in flames had walked into her room and sat down on her bed, burning and burning, but giving off no heat.
That's honestly fucking trippy as hell. You've had like 9 periods in a row. You're making ghosts everywhere. All of a sudden, a full, like, what's his name from Hereditary? Gabriel Byrne.
Oh.
Yeah. He just like walks in, just going like, do you want to talk about school? Like, he's just absolutely covered in flames.
Right.
That's intense.
I was thinking more of the Fantastic Four and the father saying it could be worse. Could be the thing hanging out in your room. And speaking of rock tongues.
But then with that guy was Michael P. Jordan. Michael B. Jordan, I believe, was the last human torch. And can you imagine? Then the fire goes out. Then you got Michael B. Jordan in your room, and then it's like you're just like a 14-year-old girl, and you're just like, oh, you're nicer than
flip it. And then he's scared. Yeah, he's horrified. Yeah.
Well, John Jr., after Betsy told her story, John Jr. argued with the witch a little bit more and then shouted that the entity should go back to hell and never return, at which point the witch ended her performance for the night.
I see when I get a one-star review that it's time for me to go home.
They could have just leaned in, make a stage, enjoy the performance. What else is going on? Is radio even around yet?
Oh, God, no. No. That's the whole thing, is that they have their nightly conversations. That's how they entertain themselves. They sit around the table and they talk and they talk and they talk and they talk. And
families talk talking talk. With one another. Family speaking like siblings or like a father and a mom being like, how was your day? Like, what?
I guess somebody probably made at some point some kind of xylophone built out of the bones of one of their uncles and would play it. I know they had guitars.
Oh. Now, around the same time as the appearance of the flame creature, Reverend Thomas Gunn visited the bell home and asked the witch again what it was and what it wanted with the bells. That was the number one question everyone asks. What are you and what do you want?
I ask myself that question fucking 3 times a week.
Absolutely. Never an answer, though.
Nope.
No answers.
But instead of giving Reverend Gunn the runaround, the witch was surprisingly frank, saying that she was indeed Kate Betts' witch.
Man, you know what that sound is? Somebody got thrown over the fucking bus.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? That's not good.
Now, upon this revelation, the room gasped, but Reverend Gunn wasn't so quick to believe. When he asked the witch why everyone should think she was telling the truth, the witch said, quote,
"Because I am tired of lying, and you deserve the truth more than any other man in this room. I am old Kate Batts' witch for certain. It was she, dancing around the pentagram, who conjured me here."
Butt cheeks can do a lot.
I tell you what, I am going to admit I could not pick myself up by my own bootstraps. I actually did come from other help.
Okay.
And when the Reverend Gunn asked why Kate summoned the witch, she said, quote,
"Why, to torment her enemy, John Bell, to torment him to his death."
Honestly, that's pretty freaking cool, dude. I would love to get a couple of witches and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I have spices, but I always get drunk and I put them in my spaghetti.
That's just cooking food.
Well, I know, but I'm saying I have a bunch of spices.
Yeah, that's stuff for the kitchen.
That could possibly be used in spells.
Have you started boiling spaghetti and making meals for yourself?
I'm boiling. How else do you make spaghetti? You don't bake it. I'm boiling spaghetti, yes.
You actually can bake spaghetti.
I am not doing that. No, you can't.
Yes, you can. Spaghetti pie.
Whatever. Yes, I boil water and I put spaghetti in it and then I put marinara. Beautiful.
That's huge.
I go to Ralph's.
Yeah.
Gotta go to Ralph's.
Good plug.
Yeah, I hear that. They need the help.
And so, after that exchange, the witch would always answer to the name Old Kate. Now, by late 1819, the witch expanded her repertoire and introduced 4 new characters to the show with suitably cryptic names. The boss was Black Dog, a take-charge character who bossed around the others with a harsh tone and harsh language.
Cool.
Yeah, I see things like ass.
Whoa, you are the boss.
You get the ass out of here and you bring the ass expenses reports to me.
Man, I respect you.
But.
Whoa.
Under Black Dog was Cypocrisy, the jokester and town gossip who spoke in a high-pitched feminine voice.
You got something bad to say, you just come sit next to me.
All right, I'll tell you what's going on, because I know the whole town will hear about it. Oh, my.
Next came Mathematics, who discussed logic and religion.
I create dry pussies.
Yeah, why don't you just get out of here? Just get out of here.
Yeah, I should go.
Why don't you just go?
I'm just going to go hang myself by my underwear on the hook on the door.
There you go. You got it. Saves us a lot of trouble.
And at the bottom was Jerusalem, who had a boy's voice and insisted that he always told the truth and therefore was usually berated by the others.
Back to children's voice. A long time ago, I used to do more child voice because it's so... It's vulnerable.
It's not vulnerable. It's disgusting.
No, this is the way boys talk. I went into the bathroom the other day and Why was it bigger?
You went into the men's room. Perhaps it wasn't your kindergarten bathroom.
Why is my Uncle Greg? Why is my Uncle Greg always trying to teach me how to play naked golf?
You're being molested. So that's actually very serious. What's happening there?
Well, but the problem here was that, at the very least, mathematics had quite the drinking problem.
Yeah, I can see it.
Although all of them drank, and they often got into drunken arguments from time to time.
Are they? What are they drinking? These ghost booze.
It's a whole performance that is highly strange. We saw a little bit again. Going back to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, like they would kind of sit, and you'd see these sort of massive. It's going to become like deeper and deeper. The Hong Kong is going to become the same. But the idea that they would sit, and in this interpretation of the story, there would be like a sonic, like, show where they would see and hear like all of these voices talk to each other, and they hear like glasses clinking and them going gulp, cool. gulp 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 and clink clink clink, and like so they would
sounds
kind
like
of,
a round table of gentlemen.
It literally is.
Well, usually it would start with Black Dog and Mathematics slurring at one another in surly tones, and pretty soon the others, also drunk, would join in. But it wasn't like they were drinking their own imaginary liquor. This usually only happened when there was booze in the Bell House. And anytime John Bell brought even a little bit of whiskey home, the four voices would soon begin boozy brawls while the sounds of animals and clattering pots and pans filled the air.
Seriously, it's a murder fist rehearsal. These days, man, I just remember like when one person had a handle of Jim Beam back in the day, and how that was like gold.
It was gold.
And we never, like, because we could never pull enough resources to get the $40 bottle.
That's a lot of money, man. It's $28 or something like that.
Any idea? And then when one guy had it, and then all of a sudden you're like, give it us. This is for us now. It's for the group.
Isn't that funny how that works?
Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But before you say it, just stop bringing booze into the house.
Yeah, what is this? Some kind of horse shit? Telling me I got a problem?
No one's telling you that
me I got a fucking drinking problem?
I never thought you had a problem until you started screaming, telling me that I have a problem? Yeah. I never said that you had a problem. You are seeming to tell me that you have a problem.
I saw a really funny but true saying on an ice cream cone popsicle stick the other day. I said, I don't have a drinking problem. I got a drinking solution. And I just laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed.
This is just, I'm happy you're my dad. I'm happy you're my dad.
You're my son.
But before you say, just stop bringing booze into the house, the four sometimes stole whiskey from the neighbors, or so they said. They said they usually stole it from John Gardner, who lived about 4 miles away. And when they did that, they'd show up at the Bell home, maudlin and sentimental.
Why the
worst kind of drunk.
Why are we talking about the haunting of John Gardner? That's the only horror that I've heard so far. This poor bastard's 4 miles away. He can't get any freaking booze because all these goddamn ghosts from the other fucking Bell Farm are drinking all of his freaking juice.
And then they show up, and they're not even like fun drunks. They're all just being like, things were better before.
Oh, yeah, get like, out of here.
You're like, yeah, y'all, do you even remember how good Weezer used to be back when we were young?
Oh, my goodness. Way back in the day. Weezer and Flaming Lips saw that concert together. They were together on mushrooms. Gonna say on mushrooms, Flaming Lips, a little bit better than Weezer.
Of course.
Weezer almost offensively. They almost treat the audience as if we're so stupid.
Contempt.
They hate us. Yeah, they hate us.
Contempt. Yeah, they started writing music for stupid people and then got mad that stupid people started showing up. What did you expect with Beverly Hills? What did you expect?
What did you expect?
I don't know.
We'll save this.
Corner that conversation.
Yeah. So now that the Bells had five characters to deal with instead of just the one, John figured it was time to give up and just fucking leave. Just leave the farm. But the witch insisted that she would follow old Jack, as she called him, to the ends of the earth.
Oh, my God.
So, while some neighbors abandoned the Bells completely because they were either scared or just fucking bored of the whole situation, other neighbors pitched in. Every night, no less than four people would drop by to engage the four voices or the witch herself in conversation, just so John Bell could get a little relief. And as far as the four went, they treated these visits like performances. Every evening, each voice would introduce itself with a song.
Oh my God.
This is fun.
It does sound fun. The first night. The first night.
And then, what are you talking about? It's like living with the Carter family.
You don't think the song is like living with the Carter family, but they were filled with trauma. Mm. And the songs don't change. So the first time,
but the
you're
audience
like,
changes, Henry.
No, it's like being on the Carousel of Progress, where every day you go to the job. And yeah, do I love the Carousel of Progress? Yes, I
do. You better, yeah.
But then sometimes you sit in the Carousel of Progress because it's 95 degrees outside and you just need a chance to like get away from the heat. So you just sit in there for hours on end. And eventually you begin to see how your brain begins to fall apart as you start going just against your own will. Just, it's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. Shining at the end of every day. And then you do this every night, and your daughter's got the monarchy, and you got tongue fungus.
Well, it's a tough life, but somebody's got to live it. Also, not nearly as hard as the slaves have it.
We do need to point that out
at every turn. Yeah.
Yes, we do have to point out there are actual people suffering here.
But after the song, the voices would usually just argue with each other using obscene language and blasphemy, and the whole thing would end only when Black Dog threatened to murder the other three.
What is this, a Modest Mouse concert?
That's Isaac actually Frog Marcus's has a story. That's drinking yours. Problem.
Yes, indeed.
Sometimes it comes to stage performance.
But I gotta say, love that Modest Mouse.
What's happening? We were good one time. The this other is time, not so much.
Have we become a Gen X podcast?
But at the end of each argument, Black Dog would give commands, ordering each spirit to commit, quote, errands of devilry across the land, but would always save one spirit to do devilment amongst the bells.
Ooh.
However, it wasn't all bad. Sometimes the voices would stay sober and treat the house to a delightful concert, singing hymns as a quartet in delightful, rich harmonies that could rival the most talented singers in Tennessee.
You can see how stories like this must actually have inspired stuff like the Haunted Mansion. Mm-hmm. And this like idea of, because there's a folksiness to the story that it's a part of, I guess, why we kind of Americanize it, like this idea that it has to be like a balls to the wall, full entertainment force. That's not only slapping and harming and doing all this other shit, but it also, it puts on a show and it creates money for the Bell family because people show up, even though John Bell Sr. was specifically saying, stop giving us money. I don't want money. I don't want to do this. It's
but
interesting
that was the
to
reverse.
See.
That was he wanted the money. That's how he got it.
Yes. Yeah. He'd be like, I'm just a humble man. And my tongue is as stiff as my penis is not.
Oh, poor guy. You imagine if you have a tongue for a penis and a penis for a tongue.
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine that?
I don't know, but I guess we're going to have to cut to that sketch now.
Now, even though most of the community who stuck by the bells were resigned to keep the status quo, others wanted to get proactive with the situation because John Bell was getting visibly worse by the day. The face twitches were starting to spread to the rest of his body where his arms would contort and they would just snap up. He had no control.
Okay. Not to be a downer here, but is it Lou Gehrig's? Does he have ALS? Does he have some kind of condition?
Well, I was going to talk a little bit later on, but the truth is that he might have suffered from, it's this specific syndrome that he might have gotten. It's like osteoporosis. I forgot what the name it is. It's like he got a bone, and it sounds like a bone infection in his face. That he got like blood poisoning. Something happened to him. So he is in a tremendous amount of pain.
Okay.
And they talk about how when I've warned you, Kissel, that dental problems lead to massive systemic health failures in the body.
This is the first time you've told me that.
I will say it again to you. Is that dental problems can sometimes, it leads to heart failure, it leads to all this other shit. So I wonder if the infection is spreading.
Yeah.
Throughout
him. And it could be. And we'll talk later on how, you know, a lot of this stuff might have had real world explanations.
Oh.
Well, the friends who wanted to get proactive tried talking the poltergeist out of the haunting, believing if they only found the right combination of words, the right argument, the witch would simply see the folly of its ways and vanish.
Good luck.
One neighbor, John Johnston, actually built quite the rapport with the spirit. And presented here is a recreation of one of their conversations, starting with Mr. Johnston. Why do you want to see John Bell dead?
Let us just say that I dislike him enough to kill him.
Do you not know, Kate, that John Bell is one of the most respected, well-liked men in all of this land?
I do. And that is why he needs killing.
And do you propose to kill Betsy Bell as well?
No. Why do you think that I would kill Betsy?
Because you torture her and follow her wherever she goes. Shout at her, slap her, and pull her hair. You have forbidden her to marry. I certainly think that proves you hate her.
Perhaps I am jealous, as a suitor would be. Don't lovers often bat each other about playfully?
I have never known any man who loves a woman to act as such.
How do you know I am a man?
Well, you're certainly not a woman. The way you curse and hit and act like you're drunk. Are you a man?
I am a spirit. I live in the wind and in the water, inside houses and out, in heaven and hell. I am all things and nothing.
Hell yeah, man. What is heaven this? Or hell, dude. James Dio, man.
Dio, man. Fucking Dio, man.
Dio.
Honestly, it sounds like having a debate. Someone from the other side.
It does indeed. It sounds like a very intense debate. So no gender here, just a spirit.
Now really, that conversation didn't accomplish a whole lot. And it actually made things worse.
Really?
It always does.
Really?
Because the day after that conversation, John was struck with some of the worst stabbing pains in his mouth that he'd yet encountered, and his throat swelled so much he could barely breathe. Now, if you'll remember from the last episode, John Johnston wasn't the only one who tried to help. You had Ghost Bro, Frank Miles, who tried to beat the ghost to death. And he returned to the house around this time to try and convince John Bell to leave the Red River.
Listen, dude, it's kind of like cutting weight when you're trying to build muscle. The right. Whole fucking shit, dude, is that sometimes it's like you look at your situation and you have to like think about like, do I cut carbs right now or do I carb up? Right now for me, if I was going to say this, if I was going to make sort of a nutritional plan for you before like a ghost and your like situation to leave in, I would like cut the carbs of this situation and like move out.
I think that makes all the sense in the world.
But as Frank made his case, he was struck by the witch so hard he was thrown out of his chair.
Whoa!
The witch herself then gave a summation of this escape plan directly to John Bell, saying, quote,
"If you think you can avoid me, then you better have, for I mean to give you a lot worse on the morrow. Try your best to hide from me, and all together we will prove to old Jack whether or not a person can escape."
Well, you know, witch, that is the problem, isn't it? The way that you're so mean to me there. See, now,
but you like it, don't you?
I am getting used to it.
Welcome to marriage.
Yeah.
However, the Bells weren't the only ones on the plantation being harassed by the witch. As we said last episode, the witch, for some unknown reason, hated the enslaved people living on the Bells' land, and they began taking measures to protect themselves. One man named Zeke started making what were known as witch balls for everyone to carry, which were reportedly vile-smelling things made of animal excrement, human semen, spit, sulfur, foxfire, and camphor. And all these things together was supposed to ward off evil spirits.
Interesting.
The old spicy baseball.
You love a spicy baseball?
Yes.
Just slathered in baby batter and a lot of shit. But you know what? Ghosts go away.
Yeah, I mean, if it works, it works. Who am I to judge?
These witch balls, however, failed to do their job for an enslaved man named Dean. He was walking along the Red River one day when the dog creature that had first appeared to John Bell at the beginning of all this returned. But this time, it spoke and reprimanded Dean for carrying a witch ball.
I tell you what, you being a bad boy. You being a bad boy holding that witch ball down because a good boy wouldn't do that. Good boy, we bring a big black dog's treats.
Oh, Bongo the big black dog, you're so cute.
Dean's charm then began to swell until he could no longer hold it. And when he placed it on the ground, the charm burst into flames.
Whoa.
Then the creature snarled and prepared to pounce. But Dean took the axe he was carrying and brought it down on the specter's head.
Nice.
Splitting it in two and sending blood splattering all over the riverbank.
Woo!
And even though it disappeared just after John split its head open, when Dean saw it again, the creature had adapted to its wounds by growing an extra head.
Multiple heads!
I gotta tell you, I thank you so much for splitting my head in half, because now I got a friend.
You do have a friend. Isn't that nice? What do you do when you have to go to the bathroom, though? It's kind of uncomfortable. You guys gotta go to the bathroom together, even if you don't have to go to the bathroom.
You know what? Me and my new friend, we don't judge each other, and sometimes a friend's gotta fart. And you just gotta be okay with it, because it's your friend.
Oh, Bongo the Wonder Dog. What's the name of your other friend?
Adolf Hitler?
Bongo and Adolf Hitler. Well, that name's going to come back and have a role in
it's
history.
It's a very nice name.
It technically was at one point. Yeah, it sort of got ruined there.
Now, by 1820, the witch had become kind of just a constant, tedious presence in the house that sometimes tortured everyone's father. And it took no new voices or personalities. In fact, when the Bells had their nightly discussions, the witch would join in with reasonable contributions.
It just gets to a point where, I mean...
The son I never had.
All the women on The View at some point have to agree.
They really do. They won't, though. Not good for TV. Wow, that show is hard to watch.
It is. Mm-hmm. The witch would also sing often and sing well. And by this point in time, the witch's voice had actually become much sweeter, as if it had grown fond of everyone in the Bell family, except, of course, John Bell.
Well, at this point, the life of a father, I mean, even today, but especially in the 1800s, was to suffer. You make money for the family and you suffer.
Yeah.
And then the family is doing fine. I think this guy's just got to suck it up and just be like, kids are happy. I'm miserable. Ain't that America?
Ain't that what it's supposed to be? But yeah. I wonder because at the time, we're still like in a deeply patriarchal society. So I wonder because I do feel like the family also is kind of working to please the father in some way, shape, or form as well. But for the most part, fathers just die of cancer.
Of course they do. Yeah.
Then the witch began actually saving lives, particularly the lives of people around Betsy. In May of 1820, the witch saved Betsy and Richard Bell from being crushed by a tree by appearing when the siblings were riding through a storm and giving them an alternate, safer route in which no trees would fall.
Like Waze.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
Then, one of the most infamous elements of the Bell Witch legend was introduced. Although this location played a small part in the original saga, the 20th century Bell Witch sightings would revolve around Bell Witch Cave.
On the LPN show this week, I spoke with Jay Wasley from Ghost Adventures, and they talked about he talked about his experiences at the Bell Witch Cave, and he is assured that it's legit.
Really?
Yes.
Very cool conversation.
So about a month after the storm, a few youngsters, along with Betsy Bell, were exploring a cave on the Bell property when a 9-year-old boy named Johnny Yose broke from the group, walked into a small passageway, and dislodged a bunch of dirt that soon buried him alive.
Man, there were so many ways to die in 1820.
So many ways, yeah.
Now, Betsy immediately tried finding the child, but had no way of knowing where he was. And it was at that moment that the room lit up, and Betsy heard the witch say, quote,
I'll fetch him out.
She became Lassie.
You're going to go fetch him out of there. Wow, that's amazing.
Now, from Johnny O's perspective, he was suffocating under a mound of dirt when he felt a pair of strong hands take hold of his ankles and pull him a dozen feet past the opening of the collapsed passageway. Huh. The boy was saved.
Whoa.
And Betsy gave all the credit to the witch, making sure to tell Johnny O's that he'd better keep his goddamn mouth shut if he wanted to keep coming back to the obviously deadly cave.
Well, now, why couldn't he talk about how the witch was good?
Well, it's because, number one, it would make her father mad, because her father was getting tortured by the witch. But I also wonder, because Betsy seems to start creating... She's starting to spin her own version of the witch story. And I think that's going to factor into why this activity, whatever this activity is, it seems to be that she is... kind of setting it up that maybe the Bell Witch is not all that bad, and the Bell Witch maybe just kind of exists as a means to an end for some other purpose.
Yeah, so far, I mean, it's really just messing with the dead, and there's some fun shows going on.
I mean,
the Bell Witch isn't that bad.
It keeps slapping Betsy. I mean, like, it's been slapping her for 2 years now.
Now, by this point, Betsy was pretty much out of the woods when it came to attacks from the witch, because the attention had been placed almost completely on John Bell. But where Betsy's attacks were relatively mild, because slaps are survivable, John Bell was dying from his attacks.
Oh, my.
So the family decided to get weird with it and brought in Kentucky's premier necromancer, Dr. Solomon Mize.
Cool.
Yes, it's like mice, but cool.
Mize, indeed.
Now, Mize was a bit of a character, a bearded little fat man who wore a frock coat a size too big and a broad-brimmed hat that cast a shadow over his face that he used for dramatic effect.
It's the priest from The Exorcist.
I love that.
But yeah, he is dressed
it's not the
like
priest from The Exorcist. That guy's way too cool. This is fucking Ignatius J. Riley if he was a fucking paranormal investigator.
Let me stick up for Confederacy of Dunsons.
I'm sticking up for him. He technically had the same exact fashion sense as the wind-up clock dude from the Return to Oz.
That dude scared the shit out of me like that movie. I'm actually going to watch that in October. I'm going to rewatch that movie. That movie is scary as hell.
It's a good one. It's solid. Now, the reason why Dr. Mize showed up on the Bell Farm was because Drury and James Johnston traveled all the way to Kentucky to petition the wizard personally.
Huh.
And so, 10 days later, Dr. Mize arrived at the Bells with all the accoutrements of a 19th century Ghostbuster.
This is so cool. Yeah. I think there's something about the historical precedent of the Ghostbuster as like a part of this, where it's like, now it's like, it's time for science.
And you can see the kids going through his briefcase and be like, what's this? He'd be like, that's a stethoscope. He'd be like, what's this? Ooh, that's to monitor the air. And then they're like, what's this? He's like, that's just a sausage. I always travel with my sausage.
That's Dr. Sausage.
Oh, Dr. Sausage. Dr. Sausage is the best because they know they're doing something naughty.
Yeah, they know it. It's for cheat day.
Now, Dr. Mize brought a small wooden windmill that was supposed to spin when the spirit passed, but it was so sensitive that just walking by it would activate the mechanism. He also had a box filled with tubes of different colored liquids that he said would change color when the witch was present.
I hope the Newkirks are listening to this episode because it legitimately sounds like all of their tech. It sounds like all the ghost boxes and all this kind of shit. It really does sound like modern, like the old, ancient, old-timey versions of modern-day ghost hunting technology.
He's going to find a witch or throw one hell of a rave. Either way, it's going to be a good time.
None of it worked. It was all bullshit. None of it worked.
That's how he feels.
I guess I go back home now.
But it's the stuff where, like, I am so torn about ghost boxes because they are both interesting, but they also just sound like, I know the whole point is that they're supposed to be random. And if you do read The Trickster and The Paranormal, the whole thing is about embracing the random and embracing the chaos in the middle and trying to decide whether or not you're going to apply meaning, because this book gets into a whole long thing about how, like, we just assume words. Like, it goes over to words having meanings. So they say that, like, you know, a can means can. Like, you label a can as a can, and therefore it is the can, even though technically the word can is just this label. And technically what it would need is a sense of telepathy in order to adhere meaning to the can and the word can at the same time.
You are one step away from yelling at an ashtray, like in that Scientology documentary. Get up! Interesting, though, indeed.
But none of his little toys worked, and the witch gave him absolutely nothing for 3 days.
Oh, come on.
To explain this away, Dr. Mize declared that his aura was so powerful that the spirit had been scared off by his mere presence.
I want to find out if his name was changed and he's not a Zabrowski. Like, if he's not.
Even so, Dr. Mize continued with the conjuring and the spells, burning various pungent herbal mixtures while reciting Bible passages to no effect. And finally, as a way to appear as if he'd done something, Dr. Mize took a shotgun belonging to the Bells that no longer worked and declared it hexed.
This is
the
shit.
Whoa, that's the problem?
This is the fucked shit.
The shotgun?
And I'm going to take this fuck shit outside to my fuck shit lodge.
No kidding.
And I'm going to reverse it.
Well, wow, you're going to reverse that, huh?
So he then cleaned the gun and physically repaired it himself until it fired perfectly. He just fixed the gun. But
that's
actually way more useful than stopping the ghost.
Absolutely.
But he still claimed that it only worked because he had removed the hex by ways of biblical sorcery. Actually, I mean, this guy was the opposite of science. He was a he declared himself a magician, and all of his power came from the Bible, from Jesus.
Well, he seems like a mechanic. He's got a mechanic mind.
Spiritual mechanic.
Yeah.
He's like some guy from somewhere in Alabama.
I love him.
I prayed for your car. That's going to be $500, please.
Well, they do charge for it.
But on the fourth day, the witch, after getting a good idea of what Mize's game was, made herself known by appearing behind the wizard and yelling, "Boo!"
Whoa! Is this the first time anyone's ever said boo? Is this the first? Is this the first witch? Because now it's just like boo. Everyone's like boo. Some witch had to say it.
Let me actually
one
say,
time first.
First true. Example of the word boo.
It's such a great word. It's so
it's a great
short.
Word.
It's boo. Really gets
well,
you.
According to the dictionary, it's just an expression. It's an to express contempt or disapproval.
No, that's yeah. just what we boo. Get when we do live
that's
shows.
That's booing.
Boo!
No, no, I don't want to know boo the boyfriend term. Oh, on Halloween, ooh! Boo, oh, actually, it was used in writing as early as the 1500s.
No kid?
Okay.
Isn't that fucking fascinating?
It is kind of fascinating.
When the witch said boo, the tiny sorcerer jumped up in the air in fright, at which point Black Dog appeared and the battle of wits began.
You're so fat.
You sit around the house.
Oh, I needed wow. someone to say how fat I am.
Yeah.
How fat are you?
Fuck this. No, it's ruined. Fuck this.
Yeah, how fat
fuck
are
you? Fuck you, piece of shit. You're a piece of shit.
You're going to die a little earlier than most people who aren't as fat.
That's the true roast.
The spirit started by asking Dr. Mize if he was truly a conjurer, and when he said he was, the wizard and the spirit began arguing over their knowledge of ancient rituals and Bible passages, with Mize claiming that his powers, spells, incantations, and potions all relied on biblical power.
Man, I just don't understand. All occultists are exactly the same. They just take it to spiritual Twitter to fucking argue.
But Black Dog dismissed Dr. Mize's power by saying that many had already tried banishing the spirit with Christian energies, and all had failed. Mm. It then began criticizing Dr. Mize's sorcery itself, saying, quote,
I have smelt your incense and your potions. You've mixed them incorrectly. You've left out critical ingredients. You fucking noob.
What does this fool us with Penn and Teller?
Somebody
why are you doing this to me?
Pwned.
Jeez.
Of course, Mize was insulted and incredulously asked Black Dog if it knew both about being a demon and the spells to get rid of demons. How do you know about both?
Hmm?
Black Dog then called him a piece of dog shit and whoa! Compared him to an uncooked sausage.
This is all just,
oh my God! You call me an uncooked sausage one more time and I am burning this house down.
This is all in an authenticated history. They wrote, like, he was called a dog dropping, called him an uncooked sausage.
Whoa.
This is fucking brutal. He's being a real Greg Giraldo.
I had no idea how hurtful it would be to be called an uncooked sausage until this deity told this man this. I didn't even know that could be a slur, but my God, that's in the repertoire now.
It is.
Then, you uncooked sausage. Man, somebody just...
you
can
get out. How dare you say those words in front of my wife?
I'm using that at the sports bar this year.
Then the ghost, Black Dog, just fucking railed on the poor little magician's skills in what seems to be one of the ghost's longest communications.
Have not hundreds better than you strive to move me from where I choose to abide? Have I not heard all the spells in my centuries of life? Where in your mixtures are black bones and honey? Where's the fly pulp, the blind worm blood, even tobacco, which you could pluck right outside the door? Where are your knots? Your bell, book, and candle. Why call me a witch? If you think I don't know all the charms, why don't you get that blunderbuss and blow the room apart with it, you rotten heap of donkey meat? Then I'll give your fat bottom a ride on my foot.
And what a ride that would be.
The witch then kept the wizard up all night with a torrent of insults about his abilities and his appearance.
You look like the unfuckable version of Wario.
Oh, isn't that sad? Wario had a lot of power. I bet you he also pulled down quite a bit of wonderful friendships.
But there was one final indignity in store for the marvelous Dr. Mize. The next morning, when Dr. Mize was getting on his horse, ready to go, leaving in defeat with his horse. Getting on his little pony.
The horse. Cook sausage. I'm a cook sausage.
Dude, I brought all my vials of colored liquid and I had it at a windmill, and you're sitting here telling me I'm fat and I'm a dog poop. I'm not a dog poop.
I'm not a dog poop. No, you're a dog poop.
But the horse wouldn't budge. And that's when Dr. Mize heard the witch one more time. She said, quote,
"Do you need help? Oh, honorable doctor, let me give your horse a slap and send her quickly on her way. And maybe I'll come along with you a piece."
The horse then reared off and took off like a shot, with Dr. Mize hanging on for dear life. And the witch afterward bragged for weeks about the torments she'd placed upon poor old Dr. Mize.
It just seems like the dad needs to die and everyone will be having fun.
I feel like if the Bell Witch is real, the Bell Witch has got to be like the fucking like Malcolm X for ghosts. You know what I mean? Like this fucking uncompromising, like Bell Witch, every single ghost hunter comes in there, fucking humiliates them. Like the Bell Witch really has to be like an inspiration for other hauntings.
Absolutely.
Now, after Dr. Mize, the season of the witch was coming to an end for the Bells. But before that was to happen, they had one more notable visitor. In late summer of 1820, future President Andrew Jackson visited the Bell Farm.
It's old-timey Trump.
Look at that. Well, I like what you've done here when it comes to the quarters and the keeping of the people, and they want to leave, but you keep them, what you've done there.
Andrew Jackson visited the Bell Farm to experience the witch for himself, and he brought along seven friends, one of whom was so unsavory that Richard Powell, who later wrote of the experience, he neglected to make record of his name.
But he did go so far as to say, and there was one especially unsavory one that I will not mention. But the unsavory ones, they love that.
Yes, they do. They work in the shadows.
So on that day, Jackson and his seven 19th century frat boys all showed up at the Bell Farm on a wagon pulled by four horses. But as they approached the property, the horses refused to move, to which Jackson laughed and said the witch had already come to visit.
Ooh.
The witch then appeared, released her hold on the horses, and said that she was glad the general understood and that she would speak with him again later that night. And so, that evening, the future president sat around the Bell's dinner table and heard stories about the witch.
This is literally, like, back in the day, the equivalent of, like, that's the kind of guy I want to have a beer with. Like,
sure.
Now, after hearing a suitable amount, the aforementioned unsavory companion began bragging that he'd beaten off spiritual forces in the past by killing a cat and using its tail to ward off spirits. And he wasn't afraid to do it again.
I hate cats, and I hate ghosts, and I hate underwear, and I hate women.
By beating off the ghost, now what exactly do you mean? You jerked off the ghost, you beat it off there, you jerked it off.
I'll jerk it off again, I'll jerk you off, I'll jerk me off.
Wow, you got my vote.
Well, this man then pulled the dead cat's tail out of his pocket and pressed it close to his nose, claiming it would warn him when the witch was near, all while saying that situations such as this one right here was why his pistol was always loaded with silver bullets.
Wait, this is hold on. Known. What was the situation?
This is what's known in back in the day as being, I believe the medical term is a douche.
A douche. A douche.
The idea of saying that you have been like, yeah, and that's why I always got silver bullets in case werewolves try to come and make me gay again.
Right, yeah. Well, you want to be careful for that.
At this point, Andrew Jackson told him to shut the fuck up because he was bored, and the unsavory fellow was a coward and a braggart besides. And Jackson wished that the goddamn witch would just show up already. Oh.
Well, he's got a lot of time. He's got a lot to think about, you know, when it comes to taking people's freedoms away and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's when the witch showed up. She said, quote,
"General, first of all, fuck you. I just didn't put that in there throughout history.
What?
General, I am here as promised and ready for business. And that business would be this bag of hot wind. With that tail up against your nose, your little pocket mouth looks like the cat's asshole. I thought it was...
This is not even me improvising. No, this is from the authenticated history.
Looks like the cat's asshole. I thought it was supposed to warn you when I was near. I've been standing behind you for the past quarter hour, Puddinghead.
Yeah, I guess my cat asshole is broken. I'm going to have to go get another cat asshole that probably isn't broken.
Puddinghead is another good term.
It really is. Yeah. You That's uncooked an old-timey sausage. One. Yeah, what would you know, you uncooked sausage?
Shut up!
Once the witch made this threat, the unsavory fellow started shaking and pulled out his pistol. The witch dared him to shoot, but when he pulled the trigger, it didn't fire.
Ooh. Yeah, it's probably because it had try silver. Again. It had silver bullets in it. Yeah.
No, silver bullets fire, I think.
I don't think they actually. I don't know.
I, mean, I think it's silver tipped bullets. That's what it is. It's not the bullet casings that are silver, it's the tips. They fire silver.
Sure. I've seen Monster Squad, but I didn't know if that was real or not.
Well, it's definitely real. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a bullet. Town. It could be a silver tipped arrow. It could be a silver tipped anything as long as it enters the creature with force.
Silver tipped anything? You want cooked sausage?
Yeah. Dildos. He's talking about dildos.
Well, after Dredd shooting once, he tried again, and still no shot came. And that's when the witch said it was her turn. Using the same force she'd used hundreds of times before, the witch pulled the braggart up into the air by his nose and slapped him before dropping him back down to the floor. She then picked him up by the nose again, this time sticking her invisible fingers up his nostrils, causing them to flare out.
This is fun as hell.
I love it. He needs to be taught a lesson.
The witch then led him around the room by his nose, holding him up just high enough where he could twiddle along on his tiptoes, flailing his arms and crying about how she was going to break his nose. My nose is going to break. Let go of me.
This is a really good idea. This is a really good way to just fucking demolish somebody's entire ego.
There's just something instinctively, and I don't know why this is, or maybe it's just in me, but when people are complaining about how you're hurting them, it makes it funny. And then you're like, yes. And you're like, you're going to break my nose. And I'm like, that makes it so much better. Like, if they would be like, I don't even care about this, I'd be like, well, go down. I don't even want to mess with your nose. But the fact that they get so upset about it, it really is half the fun.
It's when it's like when a bully meets a bully, and then a bully gets bullied, and then they go like,
that's funny.
It's such a
like
funny
thing.
Like
what happened in A Christmas Story.
Yes.
Yes. Mm. Don't lick the cold pole.
We gotta get to Christmas. I don't want to think about Christmas.
Okay.
Well, the front door then swung open, and the braggart was escorted outside and released. He ran down the road as everyone in the house doubled over in laughter, and the braggart never returned to the Bell Farm or Andrew Jackson's side ever again.
So Jackson did lose a vote, though. So he did lose a constituent there.
It's just very telling to see a guy that does the same thing where he calls all of the people that are closest to him losers and like fuck faces, and then they always like flip on him. It's like this weird thing about like history where it seems to like repeat itself.
It could. Yeah. It could.
Now, not too long after the visit from Jackson, Matriarch Lucy Bell came down with a terrible case of pleurisy, which is a painful condition. Pleurisy. It's pleurisy. A painful condition in which the lungs become inflamed and it hurts to breathe. You can still get pleurisy.
I thought she was forced to say everything in I don't even know how to do this joke. I want to make a joke about doing like plural.
You're trying to make a phonics joke?
Like, I'm trying to make a phonics joke. Be like, oh, she has to call all, if she sees a mouse, she calls it a mice. And if she sees it, she sees a...
The artist, when he approaches his work every day, and this is the truth, is that every day you want to reinvent yourself and you want to figure out what kind of artist do I want to be today? And Thistle wants to be the leading comedian on verbiage and phonics use. And It's not your day today.
But there's one hippo in the field, but look at those hippos. I guess I've been hit with pluralism. Pluricist. I've been hit with pluricists.
Pleurisy,
you're getting
pleurisy.
Cut. You're getting kicked off the show.
You uncooked sausage?
Some thought that the witch had turned her attentions to Lucy after Lucy had done kind of like a come at me ghost in the hopes that the witch would stop killing her husband.
Take me instead.
Get me.
But to the contrary, the witch actually took care of Lucy. It sweetly sang to Lucy often and offered advice. And when neighbors brought food, the witch sent them away, saying that they brought food that they liked instead of Lucy's favorites,
which Lucy's favorite, was grapes and hazelnuts.
Is that true?
What the fuck? Okay, first of all, I'm never bringing food over to your house again because I'm sorry I didn't bring grapes and hazelnuts, you freaking troll.
If this level of haunting is true, you're so used to the witch being like the worst version of Mr. Belvedere that you just don't even know. Like, you're just like, oh, okay, whatever. Okay, ghost, sure.
And sure enough, when no one brought grapes and hazelnuts, the witch, according to legend, made grapes and hazelnuts appear from thin air. And it was with these tasty snacks that Lucy nursed herself back to health.
That's what I'm really excited for, is the sports bar version of hospice, where you just sit there and just a doctor just throws nuts at your face while the playoffs are on.
Oh, that would be nice. Yeah. We haven't cured anything.
No, but at the same time, aren't you mad that they're wearing pink shoes?
Yeah.
But where the entity showed kindness to Lucy, it increased the cruelty shown to John. And in October of 1820, the Bell Witch delivered what many believe was the fatal blow to John Bell. That fall, John, who was now 71 years old, had spent a week in bed with a spell of swelling, pain, and twitching. But he felt good enough on this particular day to work out in the hog pens with his son William.
You know what? I might fake still being sick. If it comes down to be like, I'm just well enough to go work in the hog pen. What is that?
Oh, I just have a twitch. I have a little thing in my...
Well, suddenly, though, as they were in the pens, John Bell was pushed to the ground and the shoes flew off his feet.
Which is a
this
fun
is weird.
Prank. It's a hard but push. It's a hard push.
And once,
there's something about this I find this very strange, honestly.
Yeah. It's very strange. And if it was once, be like, okay, that's kind of funny. But when William helped him back up and tied a double knot, moments later, it happened again.
Whoa!
Then, after doing a double knot as tight as they could, it happened a third time. And as John lay on the ground, he was slapped in the face. And there's something... there's something very demeaning about this. The ghost is knocking him down in a pig shit over and over again, and then throwing his shoes so he has to go walk in pig shit again and again to go get his shoes.
Is this ghost from Texas? Is it a relative of yours? This is totally a Marcus Parks punishment.
John then sat down on a log in defeat, where first his face, then his entire body began jerking and contorting. John then heard aggressive singing coming from the sky, mixed with demonic shrieks and triumphant rejoicing as John cried and proclaimed that this was the end of his life, that the witch was finally coming to finish the job. But John did not die there in the hog pen. Instead, his son took him home, where John Bell crawled into his deathbed as the witch continued to fill the room with screaming, cursing, and singing.
Yikes.
John Bell lingered in that bed for 2 months in these conditions, and when a doctor came to help, the doctor had no idea what to diagnose. So the doctor checked the house and found that the Bell Witch just might have gotten a little help. Looking in the kitchen cabinets with John Jr., the doctor found a bottle half filled with an awful smelling black potion. The witch then appeared and claimed that she'd been feeding it to John Sr. and that she'd finally given him enough to kill him.
Whoa.
So, to test this claim of poison, the doctor fed the suspected concoction to the Bell's cat. And sure enough, the cat raced around the room, fell into a stupor, and died about an hour after it was given the poison.
This is back in the day.
Oh, my goodness.
This is back
course.
In the day when you could experiment. Yeah, you could really, really experiment.
Yes, and then, of course, the doctor had to go back on Infowars.merch.com, get
and
another vial.
We're like, well, now we're going to have to really do some kind of rollback. We're going to have to call this cat repellent and not human strength retainer.
The doctor then smelled John's breath and found the same scent that had been emanating from the bottle. Finally, he said there was nothing he could do at this point, so he just asked for his pay and left.
What? No.
That's it. That's what doctors do.
He killed their family cat, said there's nothing I can do, and then just fucking said, pay me, bitch, and then left.
Yep. I'm not president, but okay, hear me out. If I die, you don't get paid.
I feel like in the end, but you still did your job of looking at your mouth and going, I think he's about to die.
I am about to die. Though you're supposed to save me. All you did was kill the cat that maybe I have sex with.
Don't have sex with the cat. We've learned this.
Do not.
Well, that night, after the doctor left, on December 29th, 1820, John Bell died. And the witch, to the relief of everyone, skipped the funeral.
And this is one of the first homicidal hauntings we've seen. If wow. this is indeed true, this is the one that shows that the witch was trying to kill John Bell and
yes,
succeeded.
Yes.
Having done what it had obviously come to do, the witch said after the funeral that it would soon bid the house goodbye for the time being.
Hmm.
And it wouldn't be heard from again for a great long while.
It's like the end of Mary Poppins.
Yes.
Yeah.
After that, the witch stuck around until the spring of 1821, although the displays didn't quite have the same panache as they did when John was still alive. Finally, the witch left, although its tenure had a lingering influence even outside of John Bell's death. As it turned out, Betsy Bell finally took the witch's advice and married her teacher, Richard Powell, when Betsy Bell turned 18.
Nice.
What? But what about the 18-year-old, the young strapping lad that she was going to hook up with?
He wasn't enough.
He wasn't enough.
I mean, from what people said, Betsy Bell was extraordinarily happy for the rest of her days.
Well, yeah. You don't want to get to talking about how sometimes money might change somebody's affection for you. I don't know. Maybe the 18-year-old boy had a lot of work to do, but maybe he was a good guy at the end of the day.
Dude's got to have a job if it's going to work. That's why I was saying when Jackie was single.
This was the teacher who was grooming her.
But when Jackie was single, I was saying I want to see all these guys' bank accounts before he starts getting involved in the family.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course. The Zabrowski crime family.
Mm-hmm. The witch only appeared on the Bell farm one more time, 7 years after the death of John Bell. The witch scratched at the walls and removed sheets from the bed, but after the Bells decided to just ignore her this time around, she disappeared after 2 weeks.
It's like a troll on Twitter.
Well, now yeah. We're saying, essentially, or did it disappear from there? And did it move deep into the bellows of the Bell Witch Cave, which is what people say it did, that it changed locations, back to where maybe its origins were?
Maybe.
Kind of cool.
So now that we're here at the end, we're faced with the question of just what the Bell Witch was, if these events did indeed happen in even the loosest sense. But supposing that these events were indeed paranormal in origin, there are a few possibilities, and we'll go through those first. First, there's the possibility that it was indeed Kate Batz's witch, that it was a demon summoned from hell to dispatch a man who'd wronged her, even though she'd already gotten restitution for the slight. But to us, this seems the most unlikely.
They're passing the buck onto Kate Batz. I don't think that she is an actual witch. I think that she was a lowercase witch. I think that you'd call her a witch talk witch. I would not call her a full on. Like, this is not what she was trying to do. They basically have said that the authenticated history blew up the story of Kate Batz and John Bell's, their relationship. Like, that was not really, it was contentious, but not so much because John Bell had made a bunch of enemies. Mm-hmm. Also at the time, he was not necessarily the nicest man who ever lived. And so it could have come from a number of people, not just Kate Batz. It just seemed like whatever it was, if it indeed had a voice, just blame Kate Batz.
And how unlikable must he have been in a world where Andrew Jackson was considered charming?
I mean, we had H.H. Holmes. You remember how he was handsome and charming?
Handsome man, yes.
Then you've got the hallowed ground theory. On one occasion, near the beginning of the haunting, Reverend Sugg asked the spirit who it was and what it wanted. And the witch said, quote,
I am the spirit of someone who was once happy and who was disturbed.
Hmm.
And when Reverend Sugg asked in what ways was it disturbed, the spirit said,
I am the spirit of a person who was killed close by here and buried. My grave has been disturbed. My bones have been dug up and scattered. One of my teeth was lost under this very house, and I am here to recover it.
This whole thing's over a tooth, huh?
Well, there is a little bit of truth here.
Yeah, I mean, this claim seemed to be closer to the truth, because apparently the Bells had encountered either a Chickasaw or a Cherokee burial mound not too long before the witch appeared while they were clearing some land for crops. But the Bells left the burial mound alone, because most farmers in the area did, on account of the bad juju.
Uh-huh.
But Drury Bell and a friend of his just couldn't help themselves. Channeling their inner Joseph Smith, the boys dug up the grave for treasure, but found only bones.
How old we got is these stupid bones? Man, this sucks.
It's kind of treasure in its own right, though, isn't it?
For Marcus.
Indeed.
Yeah. Even so, as a trophy, they took a human jawbone, and once they got home, Drury's friend, bored with the whole thing, threw the jawbone against the wall of the bell house and dislodged a tooth, which fell under the porch. Now, John had reburied the jawbone to avoid the juju, but supposedly, it was the tooth left behind that the spirit was after. But once the Bell family searched under the house for this missing tooth and found nothing, the Bell witch admitted she'd made the whole thing up. And when asked why, she said, quote,
"Why? To get old Jack, of course. And I did get you, Jack, didn't I? But not one-tenth so bad as I will get you."
Well, I am dead. So
now you're not dead, but soon.
Oh, okay.
You will be dead.
All right.
But that death threat, along with all the others, begs the question of why the Bell Witch eventually focused on John Bell to the point of killing him, if the story is indeed true. And we think that in answering that why, we might answer the what of the Bell Witch.
Because I want to say, first off, there is a source I found that did a really good breakdown of the intellectual fallacies of the story of the Bell Witch. Now, we know, and I think we said this at the beginning of last episode, this is a very, very old story.
Yeah.
And it had a lot of folklore injected into it. And it seems like where it might have started was that, this is according to Last Gasp Paranormal, which is a website I found, and they did really good research. And I just want to say that Kyle T. Cobb Jr., who did this, I love this little essay he wrote about the Bell Witch. And one thing that he said is that it seemed like the person, the author of the authenticated history of the Bell Witch, the very first story, like first time we saw all of the personalities of the Bell Witch, all of these different things, they came from this author named M. Ingram. Now, M. Ingram, it seems, at the same time, he said that he received this diary. You received this diary from a member of the Bell family, and it had all of these details in it. But it seems like that Ingram might have written the diary himself, because there are words that the diary uses that basically an uneducated farmer from the 1800s might not have used these words. He used very specific terms of phrases that were very similar to things that Ingram had already used in other chunks of the books. So we don't know whether or not all the details we're saying are like true, or are they fabrication. But it seems like there are real bones for there being poltergeist activity in this story, and that poltergeist activity was a part of the tapestry of this whole thing.
Cool.
But I wonder that this next explanation to me, I think, is very interesting.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the poltergeist activity, it showed up in a lot of other like books that cover like the history of Tennessee. It showed up still in the 1800s and long before authenticated history came about. And it also could be like, as far as the diaries go, it could be that Ingram just rewrote the diaries to sound better. You know, to have a better sounding narrative. That's also
possible. And then there was also, we asked a question last week to some of our listeners, was there literature that talked about poltergeist activity where they could know about it? And there was one novel, and a listener sent it to me, a listener sent to me, thank you so much for sending me this information, about a novel called Violent, which was written by Charles Brockden Brown, which is like the first example of the American Gothic style of storytelling that involved people weaponizing ventriloquism to create a haunting. But it's interesting because at the time they said, this is so hack, ventriloquism is stupid, was literally the reception that it got back in the day, which I think is interesting.
Okay, let's get into this explanation. As we said, Richard Powell and Betsy Bell were married in 1823, and the two of them lived in happiness without a peep from the witch. But 12 years into the marriage, the thumps on the roof that began the whole saga in the first place reappeared. So, trying to end it before it even began, Richard took Betsy to see a hypnotist to see if maybe, just maybe, the key to all of this was within Betsy herself. And lo and behold, once Betsy was under, she answered in the voice of Jerusalem, the little boy who had been one of the four alter egos of the Bell Witch.
I can't wait to talk to the doctor.
Wake up! You're scaring the fuck out of me! Wake up!
So, while Betsy was in her hypnotized dream state, the hypnotist began asking questions about the Bell Witch's origins, hoping to finally get an answer of where it came from and why it did what it did. And finally, the Bell Witch revealed what had been going on the whole time. According to what Betsy said under hypnosis, the Bell Witch had been created to protect Betsy after her father had begun molesting her at the age of 12.
You guys are really going to do that to us.
Big ol' molest.
You guys are really going to make this whole... The whole thing has been about molestation. Yep. The whole fucking series. I am so mad at both of you.
He had no clue that this was coming. He had no clue.
This whole thing is just about molestation.
Well, not quite.
Not
kinda.
Fully.
You guys drug us through 4 hours of content.
Yeah. Three.
To get to the point where it was molestation.
Well, all of this came out after the fact, right? Like, as they, like, all of the story was told, and at the very end of the authenticated history, he kind of drops this bomb, saying that Betsy was claimed, because number one, because remember, his wife, when they met, was 12. So, as soon as she started getting gross and all, like, 25 years old, blah, he has a new 12-year-old in the house that he can shift to.
I see what you're trying to do. I get it. We all get it. Yeah, we get it.
So, think about, here are the clues.
Yeah. Well, the voice said that it had originally pulled sheets from beds in an attempt to mock the way John Bell had pulled the bed covers from Betsy's bed every night after everyone had gone to sleep.
It's disgusting. I'm very upset.
This is like what SNL should do.
Yeah.
What this is a sketch.
Well, I feel like I'm watching SNL because I'm not laughing at all, and I'm upset. And once again, I am upset.
Yeah. In fact, it seemed as if most of the witch's early actions were an echo of John's foul deeds. Concerning the massive pressure, this was the entity's way of mocking John's crushing weight on Betsy's body as he clamped her hand over her mouth to keep her quiet.
Could have had a trigger warning. Could have. I know those are popular. People like those now.
As far as why Betsy was attacked with slaps, hair pulls, and drags, the entity said it was because Betsy should have told her mother and the ministers what her father was doing. But since she held back the truth, she was essentially punishing herself for allowing the community to believe John Bell was a good man. Not saying it's right, but she said that was the explanation.
Okay.
In other words, she was supposed to tell the world about Bob, making Betsy Bell an almost Laura Palmer-like character who created her own tulpa to fight the evil that men, and most specifically her father, do.
It's an interesting concept,
idea
that it came, the call was coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
And that you had a poltergeist that, if this is completely saying, if it's real, in my mind, I feel like that there's evidence to show that this type of trauma, we've seen this in other stories, this kind of trauma can trigger psychic events. This is if you believe it in, at all in any way, shape, or form, but it's the truth, it's the energy of it, and that it kind of exteriorized into the house what she was experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Looked at from this perspective, Betsy Bell's fits could be seen as the entity basically siphoning energy from a living host in order to build up its strength. And once it had enough, it turned that energy on Betsy's tormentor. And then, once the entity had the appropriate amount of juice, it took on a mind and personality of its own, feeding off both Betsy's emotional torment and the overall evil energies that permeated the antebellum south. But the killing blow for John Bell actually came from Betsy herself. When it became clear that mouth stabbings, face twitching, and throat swelling wasn't going to cut it, the quote-unquote witch finally possessed Betsy to finish the job. Mm. Under hypnosis, the voice of Jerusalem said that it was Betsy who had picked the berries and made a deadly nightshade tincture in order to finally murder her father, although Betsy remembered none of it.
This is a cool twist to the story.
It really is. And it's so cute when you do think about it. I know she's getting like poison, but you put the berries in your little shirt, you know, and you go and you're like, have a nice day.
Berries. You're talking about how we cosplay as field workers for relaxing times during
course.
The fall.
Of course. Kind of fun, though.
And finally, as far as why the witch was so insistent on Betsy being with Richard instead of Joshua, it was because she actually loved Richard more, but feared attention from older men because of what her father had done to her.
Damn.
Oh.
However, looking at this confession another way, as Henry pointed out to me in one of our pre-show conversations, there is the possibility that this whole story was a case of undiagnosed dissociative identity disorder that ended in revenge murder. And through a centuries-long game of telephone, it became the story of the Bell Witch.
In my mind, imagine this, like they don't, maybe they don't really experience, obviously, we don't know how long DID has been around, and this concept of it has been around. I don't know. But the idea of someone, like maybe someone breaking into multiple personalities because of trauma,
yeah,
appears like ghost activity. You see someone break into different characters and you assume that they are being possessed and you're doing, I mean, obviously this is just a completely uneducated shot in the dark.
I've seen inside the actor's studio. I know what happens with these tormented actors out there.
But you have somebody who then the passion of it and like this thing comes out of you that people can't even really see it. They just assume there are voices in the air, yeah, and they don't know it's like someone who is like deeply traumatized and they are also maybe suffering some form of mental illness and they're just shooting out into the world. I don't know.
You need the shotgun holster that goes by the side of the bed. Ready to go. Ready to go. You ever see those? The shotgun holster on the side of the bed? You see those infomercials?
Oh, yeah. It's fun.
I'm getting ready for that. Yeah. I'm going to get that. I'm going to have a super soaker full of piss.
I hate it.
But either way, after the hypnotism session, Betsy was free. And the Bell Witch never bothered the Bell family ever again. However, that's not quite the end of the story. Since it's such a good fucking yarn, the Bell Witch passed into Tennessee legend, and it's said that the witch still has the ability to kill.
And to this day in Tennessee, fathers are still molesting their daughters. I don't want to do it. I didn't want to do that. I don't.
Every day damn we it. Come to the canvas as artists, and yeah, paint
I don't know
is
what to
do.
I got hit
ideas.
With a curveball. You got a curveball in me here. I'm not Aaron Judge. I can't be hitting everything.
In 1951, a bunch of boys from Nashville drove down to the Bell Farm on what sounds like a drunken joyride and decided it'd be a good idea to steal the gravestone of John Bell. But on their way back to Nashville, they came upon a curve called the Devil's Elbow.
Cool. Every town has that. It's the Devil's Taint. It's like, maybe we just need to fix the road. Could we fix? No, that pothole. That's the taint.
And either because they were too drunk or because the Bell Witch had followed their car, they smashed through the guardrail and plunged 100 feet into the ravine below, killing the driver and maiming the other two boys.
Damn. Got you. another molest ghost wins the day.
I just don't understand how we even got here.
But really, the place where you can still find a bit of Bell Witch action is the cave where the boy was supposedly saved, which the witch supposedly haunts. Because it's close to where the bells disturbed the Indian burial ground. By accounts, if one enters the cave, you can hear the sounds of an old lady laughing, moaning, rasping, wheezing, and whispering. And those that brave the depths are sometimes choked, slapped, have their hair pulled, or feel as if a great weight is on their chest. And as legend has it, if one were to take but a single stone from this cave, the Bell Witch will follow, bestowing misfortune and misery upon the thief until they finally meet the same fate as John Bell.
Damn, it's kind of like marrying a cougar.
It is. You never know what's going to happen. Courtney Damn. Cox, holy wow. hell, that was incredible.
Good.
The Bell Witch story taking a turn for the worse. That was a 3-hour wind-up to a massive, I feel like I just, this is the audio version of the movie The Crying Game. This is just, there's a big hook here at the end.
The twist.
The twist, of course. Thank you all so much for listening to our series on The Bell Witch. Hopefully it provided you some spooky entertainment here in the month of October.
We have a couple of little announcements. Number one, we love when you guys make shirts, make fan art, and sell them. We fucking love it, and we support it endlessly. We don't give a shit. But we wanted to make one announcement, was that if you see a shirt or any type of merch that has our logo on it, that like something that we designed that's from the lastpodcastmerch.com website on another website, if it's on Amazon,
it's not a real shirt, and it's going to be shit.
Well, the quality is going to be bad. That's why we mention it. And so just be cautious of that. And of course,
Buy anything else. It just, if you see obviously the stuff that we have developed on our merch site, on somebody else's site, it's not real.
We love it when our fans make original art, when you do your own thing, you know, and there's a lot of people out there that are making merch that is stealing art from like our Instagram, you know, from our fans. And there's a lot of people out there making bootleg bullshit. So know that the only place for official Last Podcast merch is lastpodcastmerch.com.
Yes. And we say this because we want the product that you receive to be high quality. And we really, really tried hard and to we make do, our and quality we, very high.
And so we don't want to fuck with our fan art either, because it's so important to us. It's so cool. It means so much to how many talented listeners we have that make shit and sell shit.
And of course, if you have anything that you're selling on Etsy or whatever, tag me on Instagram. I'd be more than happy to promote it and get you selling out of mugs or cups or whatever the hell you create. Because obviously, again, that is why we love our community so much, because you guys are unbelievably talented, and that's very cool. But yes, just let you know so you get the best quality product possible.
But you do have to create it. You can't just slap our logo on a coffee cup and say, I created this.
That is, you're correct.
Technically, you're correct. Though, didn't they create it? Isn't that interesting?
It's weird. It's what I was getting into with the idea of meaning, and I'll start screaming it about it later. But this weekend, we're continuing to get spooky with Haunter House on twitch.tv/lastpodcastnetwork. 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
What do you got this Saturday, Henry?
We're watching the original. We're watching the original Nosferatu. And it is me, Natalie Jane, my beautiful wife. We got Amber Nelson and Holden McNeely. We're going to be having fun. We're starting on time. The stream will start on time this week.
Yes, there you go. Nosferatu. It must have been difficult not to eat the nails. I'm a nail chomper. He must have had a lot of patience.
His own nails.
I just thought he was eating nails, and I thought you were just eating nails, which is bad.
No, not nails.
And also,
nails.
For this week's charity, we are covering the Midnight Mission, which is a great organization that it does. Like, they are completely homegrown, like working for people that are unhomed. We love the Midnight Mission, and we're really excited to raise money for them this week.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for supporting all the shows here on the LPN Network. Make sure you check out Marcus's music show, No Dogs in Space. At least I hope not, because the one they sent into space died.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, Laika did not come back.
He didn't even do anything. I don't even think they learned anything from that mission.
No, he was a good boy. He sat still.
Just died.
You don't send dogs into space because they don't come back.
They never come back. Or if they do, they're not real.
They're not real. It's inhabited. It's inhabited.
And maybe I'll watch The Thing later on today.
It is really good. And we are getting a spookier and a spookier this week and this coming months. Next week, we're going to have a throwback to something we haven't done in quite a bit of time, and I'm really excited to get spooky with it. We're getting Italian, and then after
we're going to get spooky with it.
This time we are going to get spooky with it.
So this is going to be an Italian horror story.
This time. And then afterwards, we have a fucked up story. Yeah. Coming for Halloween that I'm very, very excited for.
What's the tease for the Italian story? There was just tease.
Manja, 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 manja.
You're grabbing your breast. They can't see that, Henry, but we can.
Yep.
So thank you.
That's what I do it for. I do it for my friends.
I know, buddy. All right, everyone. Also, a Patreon, if you have a chance to give to our Patreon, thank you so much for that. We have a fun interview this week with the son of Frank Herbert, who is the author of
Dune. It's fucking huge. I didn't even want the way you're even saying it. It's Brian Herbert. It's Frank Herbert's son. This is huge. We talk about Dune for an hour.
That's what I was saying. I know. It was very fun. And also Kevin Anderson joins us. So thank you all so much for that. And check that out. And all right, that's about it. Hope everyone's hanging in there the best you can.
Sure.
We'll keep on trucking along. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gain.
Magoostalations, everybody.
Hail me, huh?
Huh?
Hey, go on, hey.
Eh? What happened to you? Your Cockney?
By the way,
you have auditions coming up next year. You better get on your Cockney accent and you have to start working again.
Oh my God,
how do I
act? You
start making money for the family.
How do I act?
I don't know.
Oh my God.
That's your job.
I'm just so used to sitting now.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.